E1, number 21B.
So, you know, sometimes Christian Scientists have a funny concept of, say, a practitioner or a teacher of the work. They always think that the practitioner have somehow some secrets which they are not going to share with their patients or with others. And that in Christian Science class teaching, because it is so secret that nobody is allowed to tell what they have been taught afterwards, it's such a secrecy that everybody thinks that you got in the class teaching some terrific, valuable secret which you are not going to give away, just like the Freemasons, that they have their secrets and they are not going to give away, and you can't get it out from them under no circumstances. And that's the same way with a practitioner. When you have gone through class, they have a secret. It's all rubbish. They get so little in the class instruction that they are really right not to say what they got. It's true, you say it. Yeah, we all have been through class, and you know that. Yeah, it's a great disillusionment. Everybody who I meet who has gone through class says, well, it was a great disillusionment, but I'm not allowed to say so. And with a certain right, you know how, for instance, the academic world, you know, they can't swallow that kind of thing. They can't swallow that somebody is taking a course of 2 weeks in a lifetime and then be established as a healer, when it takes perhaps 10, 15 years for a medical person to start out as a practitioner. And so if you tell them that your instruction was 2 weeks at perhaps 3 hours a day or whatever it is, then they just say, you are nuts. This is not possible. You are nuts. And so, as just lately in a publication, could call a high official of the Protestant Church in Germany just published an article and said, well, the academic world cannot take Christian Science serious as a science, because in no way have they ever shown the scientific criteria of this Christian Science. I think we have to see that this subject is bigger than that we just can get hold of it in a few hours. It's much bigger. Well, so there is no secret in this teaching. No secret at all. Nobody can keep a secret, because it has to get out of our system. An idea is so big that it explodes. It has that power of getting out, of exploding, of impulsion. It must get out, it must express itself. That's the nature of an idea. We come to truth, and as we come to truth, we have the sonship of idea, and we saw that with that sonship, it's meaning that truth, that every idea upholds and claims and affirms the nature of every other idea. And so in the human, that may show itself as a upholding, say, of the divine standard. Upholding the divine standard. Upholding the divine standard, it's really a sense of the human where you feel a certain measure of dominion. That man has dominion. That shows itself in the human. That's how the truth, when translated to the human level, presents itself as having dominion, to have that sense of being very affirmative in one's life, not negative in one's life, always a sense of having a progressive sense of life, optimistic sense of life. That's what we get in truth. Because we can always see the truth about something, that the truth is going to win. We get the sense of mastery, of victory, of being able to be the victor in a situation. It gives a sense that we can never be licked in a situation. Can you get that sense of truth, the affirmation of truth? And when we get further to love, to the motherhood of the divine idea, well, that shows itself forth, that motherhood in the human, say, as compassion. When you say one of these ideas, you see, is compassion. You have a whole range of qualities, you know, when you come to the human, like being impartial, the impartiality of love. That's what you do in love. Forgiving. Peacemaker. Huh? Blessed are the peacemakers. It's interesting that we find here really all those qualities of the Beatitudes. Here this is because we are in Christianity and the Beatitudes are depicting the Christianity sense of men. Blessed are ye, ye, men, Christianity. The Beatitudes don't say something about the nature of God. It says something about the blessed nature of man. So, it's also interesting here. Could you feel that? But when we come to the human aspect, that we find much more qualities that express it than when we are in the divine. In the divine, it is limited to some very specific ideas, whereas when we come to the human, we can see that that pyramid is broadening out and broadening out, that the divine idea, when translated to the human, takes on an enormous lot of qualities. Enormous lot of qualities. So that within that column of the true humanhood, we would have an enormous lot of human qualities. There we started with being principled. Well, we also had that we are impersonal, that we are rightful or righteous in the right sense, that in mind we think in terms of ideas, that we have but one mind in our consciousness, therefore only think in an ideational way, that therefore we are big-minded and broad-minded, that all that comes in soul, we are unselfed, we are humble, sincere, stable, we have a stability, we have integrity, we have joy, happiness, satisfaction, a whole lot of it comes out here, that we have capabilities, that we have soul sense and all that. And all this says, and all that when you don't know anything anymore at the moment. Yeah. And so we have it in spirit, that wonderful sense of being spiritually minded, single-minded, pure-minded, being so baptized that we are transparent, that we have a transparency. You look sometimes into the face of somebody and you just feel everything is completely transparent. There is no vile in it, no impurity in it, no back thoughts in it, nothing is in it. You just see as if it would be clean and clear, like crystal clear. In life, that enormous sense of being generous, magnanimous, of giving, of mercy, all these qualities of feeling of to be a fount of life, that one feels one is a whole stream of life goes out from everyone, the fullness of life. In truth, that very strong sense of being master of a situation, of upholding a standard of truth, the standard of true manhood, of being so firm to affirm itself in every way that is true and right, and in love, that mellow sense, tender sense of love, of being compassionate, of being tender in a situation, of having that sense of peacemaking, always bringing in that which is saving the situation instead of making it more difficult. That's the motherhood sense of being impartial, blessing, and so on. Okay, we could take the last column just quickly. Here we encounter the mortal manhood, and this will give us no difficulty whatever, because we know the mortal only too well out of our whole experience, and so we can depict him in all ways and means. And it's not very difficult, because instead of being principled as true humanhood, we know that if we don't have a principle, then we are jolly well very personal. And that's what a mortal is. He is the big ego, he is the big I, he's personal. Personal. He has always that little I instead of the big I am. Yes. Yeah. It's that I. You just can watch the discussion of such a person. I. I have done this, I have done that, I could do this, I. It's that constant concentration on really the personal ego, personal ego, the I, yes. It's that sense that the little I is the center of everything, that the world turns around one's own I, and that one is so important as the I, as the little I. Whereas we are very important as the I am. That's quite true. If we come to mind, then naturally this personal sense of the little I in mind is very, can you say, opinionated, has its own mind, it's opinionated. The little I knows. The false sense of knowing, opinionated, yeah, thank you, opinionated, you know, that is right, what we think is right. We have our own mind, with our own knowledge, our own opinion, our own sense of how things should be, so everything turns around our own opinion. I think that perhaps summarizes it best. Perhaps you find another term to define that mortal who always just thinks what he thinks is the only way to think. It's the only right way to think, the only right way to look at things. And he says, as I look at it, and then he says, that's my way of looking at it. Actually, when you think that's the only way of looking at it, then you are opinionated. It's also when we think that we had here in the true humanhood, I think you put down also big-mindedness. Here you have really that narrow-mindedness. A mortal is very narrow-minded. It's a narrow-mindedness, little-mindedness, egotistic-mindedness, all this mindedness with a small m is really that what makes up a mortal. So that he's a real stinker, huh? Yeah. Or when we get to soul, and we see that each idea is identified with its principle, therefore is as big as its principle, therefore has a divine ego, then naturally in the human we see in true humanhood that he has no ego of its own, he is unselfed, free from an ego, or egoless, we could have said there, egoless. And naturally, when we come to the mortal, he has a real good ego. You call it egotistic. He has a personal ego, a personal self, an own self. He's self-centered, self-interested. All those many terms which we can combine with the prefix self, they all belong here. If we go to spirit and see in the divine that each idea reflects each other idea, this gives in the human a kind of transparency, of spiritual single-mindedness, so that in the mortal manhood, instead of having that transparency or that reflection, you really have absorption, self-absorbed. Self-absorbed, actually a sense instead of transparency, an impurity in himself, an impure thought, an impure motive, dualistic motive, dualistic attitude, all mixed up, spiritualistic, materialistic. And you see, you get all sorts of things which indicate the counterfeit of that pure reflection. It's deflection, it's absorption. Instead of reflection, it's absorption. Instead of pure reflection, it's duality, it's mixing spirit and matter in one's mentality, which can be spiritualistic, or instead of being spiritually single-minded, you are materially single-minded. That's the materialistic point of view. Can you hear? All that, when you take the divine qualities and see at it in an opposite way, you get really material man. The mortal is either materialistic or is spiritualistic. Everything is turned towards matter, that's materialism. Every value are material value. Everything to attain is matter, that's materialistic. Everything that develops must develop materially. That's materialistic. You see, on the materialistic, you have a whole range again of qualities. Do you see that? Materialistic is not just a term. It's a compound term for having material aims, material channels, for material developments, for material motives, material values. Or if you mix matter with spirit, which again is not pure reflection, it's spiritualistic. And spiritualistic means that we feel that both spirit and matter are real, that we can work with both spirit and matter, that we think the spiritual can only work through matter, that therefore the spirit must have the channel of body and matter in order to express and manifest itself. We have a whole range of attitudes. Then if we come to life and see in the divine the fatherhood of idea, then in the human that this precipitates itself and translates itself into a human quality as magnanimous, as generous, as merciful, as giving, as that richness of expression, that aura of richness of fullness, that when it is not really convert, but when it's counterfeit of it in the mortal, is really the very opposite, namely that sense that you take away from every man what he is in the way of manhood. It's criticizing, it's pride. I like here criticism because I prefer people who smoke and drink and don't criticize to those who don't smoke and don't drink and from morning to night criticize. Criticism to me is a greater evil and poison than drinking and smoking. Criticism, damaging people with gossip. Gossip is really that counterfeit. Instead that there is a flow of truth coming out, it's that gossip about everything and naturally never telling the real truth. Instead of giving out, it's taking in. It's that self-consuming sense you have here. A mortal who is always trying to get, instead of give, where can I get, where I can gather together, that getting sense, and this is really a consuming sense. It is not a building up sense, it's a consuming sense, that self-centeredness. One always sees in the practice that people who are suffering under consumption, that is, suffering under lack of blood. They are all lame ducks. They can't give out. They don't have a drive within itself to give out. Therefore, because they don't have the drive within itself to give out, nothing is vitalized in themselves. And so they get into a state of consuming what they have. I think that sense of life is so important for us that I don't know where it came from, really. I think it must have come from those ages or centuries where people had to struggle for survival, to make a living. Those very hard years when, say, in the last century and perhaps in the beginning of this century, the laborers had to work very hard to get the least of what they needed. That established a sense, really, of getting, just for the sake of survival. I'm not quite sure, medically, could you help, Helen? Consumption is no more so much a disease as it was in the last century, or?
No.
No? It was really something that one was having in the last century much more. And I think it had to do with that general attitude of men. I mean, I don't know how it was in this country, but over in Europe that time of when the industry was established and you had the labor problem and the laborers were nearly treated like slaves. They had to work for 12, 13, 14, 15 hours in order to get just the minimum pay to live with a big family where the children had already gone to work, where you had no free Saturday and not even Sunday. That established in a whole mentality of getting, and that's consumption. It's consuming, trying to consume what you can get. Whereas today, one has much more the feeling that one has an abundance, affluence, and therefore can give more. Actually, spiritually, this is very important. I have watched students. I've watched students trying to get hold of this idea over 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, never getting it. And when you look at their mentality, it is very often a sense that they only study this idea in order to get something for themselves. That's consumption. to get it for oneself. I think blessed is he who had never had that sense that he wants to study this science in order to get something, but who studied this science in order to give more. And I think that makes life full. Truth, we have here the sonship of idea, which shows itself in the human as the upholding of the divine standard, and naturally the other way around is the mortal who is always destructive. Has this destructive attitude, this pessimistic attitude. He always sees the black side of everything, the dark side of everything, the denying, which is really lying, the denying attitude, denies life, denies progress, denies the new, denies what is right, negating this negative attitude, you know these people. They see in everything only a danger, something negative, and so little by little build up in themselves a completely negative attitude. I like to have a positive attitude, and in out of 10 cases be wrong, 9 times wrong, but in the 10th case to be right. That's much better.